Welcome to the Scottsdale Big Book Study, where we will study the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today's date is Saturday, March 9th, 2024. My name is Tanya G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Louisiana. I will be your host today for today's study. Our co-hosts are Sue L., Johan, and Nancy, and I think that's all. At this moment, if you have any questions during the meeting, please contact either myself or any of the co-hosts by private messaging in the chat function. The chat function will be disabled until 5 minutes before the questions and answer session. Please note that the speaker, Harlan G., will be recorded for the duration of the study. However, the questions and answer session which follows will not be recorded. We ask if you can please make sure you keep your microphone on mute at all times during today's study. And also, please turn off your video if you are exercising, eating, or if you need to step away from your screen for any reason. During the meeting, we will post a link to our seventh tradition. This money goes towards the cost of our Zoom account, the cost of uploading your recordings, and we also send contributions to our intergroup and WSO. We will post a link to the previous week's recordings. These are available by clicking on the link that will be posted in the chat box. Now, I will turn the meeting over to Harlan G.
Thank you very much, Tanya. I really do appreciate your service, and thank you to everyone who does service on this meeting. And once again, I just want to reiterate, there's a lot of service that goes into this meeting, from treasuries to the bills that need to be paid, to the website, to the people, to the people who put the recordings on the website. I got some of the statistics on how many people are listening, and it was eye-opening to say the least. Wow. But anyway, I just want to remind you before we do anything else that if you are in the state of Arizona, inside the state of Arizona, this meeting next week will begin 1 hour earlier. If you are not in the state of Arizona, this meeting's time will not change for the foreseeable future. I change so you don't have to. But if you're in Arizona, it will be 1 hour earlier. And our evening meetings, Sunday through Friday, beginning tomorrow, will begin 1 hour later, unless you are in the state of Arizona, which it will be the same time. Arizona does not change its clocks, and that's what makes it confusing. Arizona doesn't change its clocks. So everyone around us changes, so we don't. Okay, we have been talking about God. We have been talking about the confluence of what Ebby is bringing to Bill and what Bill already knows from Silkworth. Bill is aware, because when we start, we're going to be on page 11, the wars which had been fought, the burnings, that's where we're going to start. But we're going to give a little bit of a running start to that. We have been looking in on Bill Wilson, and Bill Wilson is getting a visit from his childhood friend, Ebby Thatcher. And Ebby does not know about alcoholism. He doesn't know that alcoholism is an illness of the mind and an illness of the body. He does not have this information. But what Ebby does know is that he has entered into the Oxford group almost, against his will. He was drunk in Manchester, Vermont. And he got arrested for drunk driving. And he had already had, the previous April, he had already had a run-in with the police. For further amplification of this, listen to last week's recording, and it gives you the entire story. And Ebby is in the Oxford group. He's in New York City and going to Oxford group meetings at the Cavalry Mission in New York. And he enters there in September of 1934. And from September of 1934 to October of 1934, he is working what we know today to be the six tenets of the Oxford Group movement. And the six tenets are what we would call steps. And these steps, these tenets of the Oxford Group Oxford Group program are what he's been doing, and they have their four absolutes. And the four absolutes are absolute purity, absolute honesty, absolute unselfishness, and absolute love. And nobody can really own up to an absolute very easily. That's a very difficult thing to do. And the six tenets of the Oxford Group is, number one, complete deflation. Number two, dependence and guidance from a higher power. Number three, moral inventory. Number four, confession. Number five, restitution. And then six is continued work with other alcoholics. But since the Oxford Group wasn't an organization concerning itself with alcoholism or alcoholics, that was give testimony to what Jesus and God have done for you. So these were the things he was doing. And from September to October and October to November, Ebbie Thatcher, for the very first time in his adult life, puts together 2 months of sobriety. 2 months of sobriety. This is the first time in his entire adult life that he is able to stay sober for 2 months. He hasn't had 2 months of sobriety since he was a kid. And Bill Wilson cannot put together 2 months, but, well, actually he did. He put it together in 1933 and 1934, but he's not doing it now is the point. He's not doing it now. And he triggers the allergy on November 11th, and Ebbie comes to see him in late November. And Ebbie is telling him that he doesn't want to drink because he's found religion. And Bill is very skeptical of this, extremely skeptical of this. But a lot of things are flooding in Bill's head, like that old wartime day in Winchester Cathedral comes back to Bill. What did he see in old wartime or old, yeah, in Winchester Cathedral? He sees the grave of a man who died drinking himself to death. This man drank himself to death. And as such, this had a big impact on Bill because he doesn't want that to be his fate. He doesn't want to drink himself to death. And Bill has been warned by his mother and Grandma Wilson about the evils of drinking, because Bill's grandfather on his father's side was an alcoholic, and Bill's father is an alcoholic, and Bill's father really was absent from Bill's life throughout most of Bill's life. His father was not a factor. And this really did a number on Bill, as you can imagine. And Bill himself is not happy being drunk all the time, but he has no alternative. So with that in mind, we're going to today examine, do we think the way Bill thinks? Do we eat the way Bill drinks? And if we do, we are probably in the right place. Let's go to page 11, and we're going to start on the second paragraph, the wars which had been fought. The wars which had been fought, the burnings, the chicanery that religious dispute had facilitated, made me sick. I honestly doubted whether, on balance, the religions of mankind had done any good. Judging from what I had seen in Europe and since, the power of God in human affairs was negligible. The brotherhood of man, a grim jest. If there was a devil, he seemed the boss universal. And he certainly had me. Let's stop right there. Because this paragraph is as timeless and universal as it gets. Every single person that I have spoken to in my 45 years in Overeaters Anonymous, and that includes whether I was abstinent or not, struggles with this idea of God. And yes, there have been very religious people, rabbis, priests, ministers, deacons, lay people, nuns that I have gone to meetings with over the years, cantors I have gone to meetings with over the years. And no matter what your station in life, No matter how religious or not religious you are, it seems that the struggle with this God idea is one for the ages. I have some theories as to why. I am not doubting that there are atheists among us, and that's fine. I am not doubting that there are agnostics among us, and that's fine. The only requirement here is that you be willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself. Now, I could stop right there and go to the next paragraph, but I'm not going to. And the reason that I'm not going to is I am compelled to share with you my theory. This is my theory that I am not alone in this. From the time I was a child, I had a belief that there is a God. Now, I did not get this belief from my synagogue necessarily. I did not get this belief by attending Hebrew school necessarily. I think it came to me as a very, very young child that there is a God. My perception of God is not important here, so I'm not going to go into it. But what is important here is that I do believe that I am not alone in this. I believe that there are people with that struggle not with the idea of a God, not with the existence of a God. They struggle with their anger toward God. We are people who have been traumatized. The other night in our meeting here in Scottsdale, we were reading a paragraph about the pain of life. We were in the chapter to wives, and we were reading about how the drunks pull the piano keys and they break things and they strike the children. And I think that no matter who you are, if you are here in this Zoom room, if you are one of the people here, and there's 122 of us, I guess, here, but if you are one of the people that is in this room right now, whether you look like it or not, we have been hurt deeply by life. We have been hurt deeply by this disease. We have been traumatized by this disease. Life is hard. Life is tough. We have had suffering in our life. And like anything else, I believe, and this is my opinion, I believe that some of us react differently to pain than others. And I believe that one of the things that many, many people do, I almost said most, I stopped myself, that many of us do is we get an anger, a grudge toward God. Now, you may say to yourself on the outside of this as an objective observer, how can we have a grudge toward God? The temerity, the audacity of someone to have a grudge toward God. Yet, I believe that I have to work this out throughout my life, and I believe I'm not alone. So when we read this paragraph about the wars and the religious dispute and the chicanery and the power of God being a jest and all this other stuff, many say to themselves, I won't believe in God because there was a Holocaust. I won't believe in God because of the injustices of the world. I'm not going to believe in God because of the Trail of Tears. I'm not going to believe in God because of the injustices of man against man. And that's your choice. But what I have to ask myself every day of my life, is this the hill I want to die on? Now, walk me through this if you can. Not now, this afternoon. Call me and walk me through how me eating Reese's peanut butter cups and giving God the Italian salute, giving God the finger, How is that going to bring back one Holocaust victim? Walk me through how that's going to bring back one slave during one of the most horrible periods of our history. Walk me through how the Trail of Tears, how that's going to bring back one Native American, and I will lead the procession to the pizzeria today. I had an interesting phone call a number of years ago. It was the morning after the presidential election. I'm not going to say what year. And a woman announced to me on the phone that she was no longer going to stay to a food plan, nor was she going to believe in God, nor was she going to ever work the steps again. Because the presidential election is proof positive that there is no God. I saw a picture of this person 2 years ago on Facebook. I'm not a big Facebook person. My account just got hacked for the 83rd millionth time. They hacked my account. I don't know why. I don't know what that's about. As long as it doesn't cost me money, I don't care. You want to hack my Facebook? Hack my Facebook. If a picture of my kid or a picture of my dog or a picture of me at the convention or a picture of my girlfriend is that important to you, I don't know why you have to hack it. You can look at that without hacking it. You need to hack my Facebook, hack away and have a good time. Nem gesunter hate, we say in Yiddish. Nem gesunter hate. Have a good time. Anyway, where was I going with this? I saw a picture of this woman on Facebook about a year, 2 years ago. I think more close to 2 years than a year. And she was probably up in the 450-pound range. And my question in my mind is, how's that working for you? Now, there are history books full of wars and injustices. I know a little bit about injustice. The entire family that my father came from was murdered. They were obliterated off the face of the earth. I don't have cousins and aunts and uncles, never did. I don't have any of that. And where are these people? They were murdered. And why? For what reason was my grandmother, my grandfather, my uncles, my aunts, my cousins, as young as 6 weeks old, murdered? Why? What in the world did they do? I know a little about injustice. I'm familiar. I'm familiar with injustice. I have been traumatized. I'm not different than you. I have my own trauma. I remember going through years and years and years and years of the most harsh rejection by the world that you could imagine. I was told as a child, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years old, that existentially I'm unacceptable because of my weight. Existentially, I'm unacceptable because fat boys are unacceptable. They're unacceptable to girls. They're unacceptable to the world, and you better lose weight. You better, if you cared about your mother, you wouldn't eat that way. If you cared about your father, you wouldn't eat that way. If you want to get a girlfriend, you better not be fat. If you want to get a good job, and on and on and on. And you know what? I've been in recovery for a long time. I still pay the price of the dreams and the aspirations that this world took from, or this disease took from me. But if I let that get me, and I say to myself, screw you, God, how's that going to help me in the one life I have? What's that going to do for me today? I can tell you exactly what it's going to do for me today. It's going to mean that the Nabisco company and the Hershey company are going to be enjoying increased profits, which does nothing for me. The people who make Imodium are going to be enjoying increased profits. The people who make Charmin are going to be making increased profits. And the people who make 5 and 7 extra large clothes are going to be making increased profits. I say, screw them. And embrace God instead of screwing God, which doesn't screw him, and embracing them. So everybody has a choice in this world. You can either be willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself. You don't have to call that God a religious God. But without a willingness to believe in a power greater than myself, I'm not going to recover from this disease. I'm going to say that again, so hopefully it'll sink in. I'm going to say it 2 more times. Without a willingness to believe in a power greater than myself, I will not recover from this disease. I'm going to say it 1 more time. Write it down. Remember it, because this is important stuff. Yes, it's going to be on the test. Without a willingness to believe in a power greater than myself. Notice I didn't say you have to believe. I said a willingness to believe. I am not going to recover from this disease. Not going to recover. I have a good life. I can walk 3 miles without stopping. I can pay my bills. I can get in and out of a car. I have a working relationship with my business, with my friends, with a romantic interest. I have a good life. Is it perfect? No. Do I wish I had a do-over? Yes. Yes. I have vivid memories. I wish I could forget. I wish there was a pill so I could forget. I wish I could forget the doctors screaming at me. I wish I could forget the doctors screaming at me that you're going to die. I wish I could forget the embarrassment of this world as it made me into an object of ridicule. I wish I could forget the sound and sights of children who laughed at me and adults who laughed at me. I wish I could forget the night of homecoming and I sat home. I wish I could forget all the times that my friends were dating and I couldn't, didn't. I wish I could forget a lot of things. But it is through God that I can live in spite of that, and because of that, that I have a life worth living today. So we all have reasons to be mad at God. But I'm giving you a reason to be willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself. And that reason is, this is not a dress rehearsal. This is not a practice run. This is it. And as each day clicks off, you never get it back. This is it. Do you want to fight battles that don't exist? Do you want to give God that Italian salute or give him the finger because you're pissed off and hurt and waste the one life you have? Food kills, absolutely. Food kills. It'll kill your dreams. It'll kill your ability to be loved by people who love you and to love them back. And the only way out of this disease is through a spiritual experience. You're not going to get out of this by a food plan or meetings or tools. In order for you to recover from this disease, it is required that you have a working relationship with a power greater than yourself. You don't want to call it God? Don't. You don't want to name it Jesus or Israel or Buddha or whatever it is? Don't. Choose your palatable path. Choose your way of believing. Do what comes natural to you. You don't have to believe. You just have to be willing to believe. Your life depends on it, not mine. Not mine. I'm not telling you this because I make a commission on you. You don't want to believe? You don't want to recover? Don't. The dogs bark, but the wagon train continues. I'm begging you that if you're not having the kind of relationship with a power greater than yourself that you think you would like, work toward it. I know some of you better than I know others. Some of you I hear all the time on Vision. Some of you I see all the time on our Scottsdale meetings in the evening. And some of you, it's because you don't open your, and I'm not chastising you. You don't open your camera, or I can't see you. I don't know. You don't share. That's okay. Or it's just a phone number here. I don't, you know, some of you I don't know. Some of you I do. Some of you I don't. But you have to work at any relationship. That's the point. The point is, if you don't work at a relationship, you don't have it for long. If we were friends and all of a sudden, every time you called me, I didn't call you back, eventually, excuse me, you'd stop calling. You'd get the message. You got to communicate with God. Prayer, talking, listening. Your life is in the balance. Your life is in the balance. And Bill is struggling with this idea of God because he sees that God didn't do anything about the wars and the chicanery and all the hatred and all the stuff. We have to remember something, and then we'll leave this subject. God didn't put a bunch of robots on the earth. God put people. And as people, you have a choice to do good or bad. You have a choice whether to do this or that. And with no good, there is no bad. With no bad, there is no good. Now, don't ask me in the Q&A to define good and bad. I don't know. But I do know that there are people who are evil, who lived in this world and tried to conquer, enslave, kill other people. God was crying too. God was there crying too. When those people in my family were murdered, God was weeping along with my dad who survived. God was weeping right there too. God did not put a bunch of robots on the earth. He put human beings on the earth, and we have the power of choice. Don't blame God for what people do. Let's move on. Page 11. But my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Doctors have been pronouncing me incurable from the time I was a little boy. Screaming and yelling at my mother and father about how fat I was going to die. I wasn't going to live to see 30. There's three traumas in a fat boy's life: going to the doctor, buying clothes, or talking to girls. Those are the three traumas in a fat boy's life. Nothing traumatizes a fat boy like those three things. Girls, doctor, buying clothes. Oh, let me just hide under the bed, if you will, until the storm passes, please. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. Then he had, in effect, been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. Let God take you to a place better than the best you have ever known. Does it have to be a religious God? No. Does it have to be the God of anyone else's understanding? No. Is it your choice what your conception of that power is going to be? Yes. You know, I've never really had a problem with my conception of anything. Let me choose the way I want, and I'll be just fine. I beseech you, I am begging you, let your chip on the shoulder toward God go. You are not going to recover. You're going to see us recovering, and you're going to wish you had what we had. And I'm giving you right now a big part of it. Step two, you've got to let it go. Had this power originated in him? Obviously, it had not. There had been no power, no more power in him than there was in me at that minute, and that was none at all. In other words, with all the BS in the world today, the wars, the hostages, the politics, the economic injustices, with all the injustice in the world through race and religion and class and country and flag, with all of it, here was a guy that Bill Wilson knows to be an alcoholic, and he's sober. He's sober. Let's see where he goes with that. Do I think like Bill thinks? Yes. Do I eat like Bill drinks? Yes. Then welcome to OA. Welcome home. Let's see where he goes from here. That floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in a human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. Never mind the splitting of the Red Sea and the burning bush and the resurrection and all the other things that you could point to. Here was a drunk not drinking and glad about it. And Bill had never imagined this possible before. Never imagined it could be true. Bottom of 11, last sentence. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a new soil. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. He's still not 100% convinced. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. Antipathy means a feeling of dislike. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. If there's a God personal to me, why did he make me a fat boy? If there's a God personal to me, why didn't he give me Laura and Rob Petrie for parents instead of Max and Virginia Grabowski? If there's a God personal to me, why didn't I win the lottery? Why wasn't I born into wealth? Why do I have to work my butt off when I'm almost 70 years old? Where was God when the girls at Fort Knightley in eighth grade turned away and didn't want to dance with me? They wanted to dance with the thin boys and the good-looking boys, not me. Where was God when I was getting rejected by the world? He was right there crying with me the whole time. He was right there crying with me the whole time. God's will is invitational. You have to ask him to come in and say, God, I need your help. This is my experience. This may not be fact for you. And often God's will is not only there for me, there in ways I could not even imagine. Where do I find God? Most often in the face of one of his children. Reach out to someone else and he'll be there every time. Let's continue. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind of spirit of nature. Notice your capitalizations. He's talking about God. But I resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. My friend suggested then what seemed a novel idea. He said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? That opened the door for 50,000 generations yet unborn, along with us today who are of different religions and different ideologies and different nationalities and different backgrounds, to sit here today figuratively in the same Zoom room and share our meeting together, because there is no requirement to believe in a certain way or to pray in a certain way or to act in a certain way. All that is required is a willingness to believe that there is a power greater than ourselves. That sentence, that concept, why don't you choose your own conception of God, is something that Bill could now accept. That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. So Bill is now going to reiterate something I have been saying all morning. This is the guts of step two. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. It's only a matter of being willing to believe. Seriously speaking here, and I know we're running on time here, and I want to I was hoping to cover more ground, but we'll cover what we cover, and that's okay. Are you going to be so arrogant? Are you going to tell yourself that you are so arrogant that you created this world and puppies and kitties and babies and people and girls and boys and trees and birds? Really? Seriously? Are you kidding me? You created all this? You can get me abstinent? I don't think so. Are you so egotistical that you cannot conceive that there's a power greater than yourself? You don't have to define it. You don't have to know what it is. You don't have to compare it to what anybody else believes in. The only thing that matters is that you be willing to believe that there's a willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself. How's your way working for you? How's it working for you? Did you get here on a roll? I don't think so. Did you wake up one day and say, "Wow, I'm richer than Midas. My spouse is the most beautiful specimen of their gender ever created. I have more friends than there are in a phone book." Yes, older people teach the newer people what a phone book is. They don't know. I have a great life. I think I'll go join Overeaters Anonymous. Where's the nearest meeting that I can go to? I don't think that's how you got here. I think you came in here with your tail between your legs. I think you came in here because this was the last house on the block. And you tried Weight Watchers and Tops and Jenny Craig. Maybe you had the urine of a pregnant woman shot up your keister. Maybe you paid an acupuncturist to put something in your ear, and every time you want to eat, you pull your ear. I went to meetings with somebody years ago who did that. And one day I heard someone else tell her, "I think you forgot a couple of times," because she was way bigger than we had ever seen her. And I think she forgot to pull her ear a couple of times. Seriously, did you go to the hypnotist? Did you go looking for something in therapy that's not there? I'm not knocking therapy. I go. I'm not knocking psychiatry or psychology or psychotherapy or analysis. I'm not knocking anything. Did you find recovery there? I don't think so. Maybe you found other things there, yes. But not recovery. Not recovery. Did you go to the doctor and get diet pills? I did that when I was 9, 10, and again, I think at 14. Did you find what you were looking for? If you did, you wouldn't be here. I'm not even going to talk about surgery and all this other stuff. I'm not going to comment on it because I don't want to give any impression of an outside issue. But there are people today here in this meeting that have had those surgeries and found they still need to be here. It's a willingness to believe that there is a power greater than yourself. Let's continue. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. This is the moment in time. In November of 1934 at 182 Clinton Street in Brooklyn, New York, USA, where two unlikely people, two drunks, two alcoholics, neither of them theologians, neither of them professors, neither of them qualified to bring together the science of the disease and the theory of the recovery. And this is the confluence, the nexus, the joining together at this moment in time. There had never been a period of time on earth when the disease and the recovery were considered together, and that this is the birth of our way of life. So for thousands of years, alcoholics were afflicted with no end in sight, and they ended up in asylums, jails, dead, lobotomies. What happened to the women alcoholics is infinitely worse than the imagination can take you to. They had it much tougher than the men. And at this moment, the suffering was over. This is the moment in time, the moment in history where the disease and the recovery weld themselves together. The confluence of two rivers makes a river mightier than the two that form it. The nexus, the confluence, the joining together. Let's look at the next paragraph, because it shows the enlightenment. Thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. And how do you display that you want him enough? You put the food down, you work the steps, and you help others. It's not a conclusion of the mind. It's taking an action. That's how I know you're convinced. How do I know you've worked step three when you're doing step four? How do I know you, whatever? This is what is required. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. What did he see? He saw recovery. Now, Bill had been hospitalized twice, and he had seen alcoholics and moderate eaters and heavy eaters or heavy drinkers, moderate drinkers, not drinking. Were they happy about it? No. But he saw that Ebby was happy in his release. So he saw for the first time recovery. What did he feel? He felt hope. The hope that existed in the soul of Bill Wilson was this, that if Ebby could stay sober 2 months and be happy about it, Bill had stayed sober as long as a year, but he was miserable, absolutely miserable. It wasn't a life, it was enduring each moment in the most miserable way you could imagine. But Ebby was happy in his release. He felt hope. I believed. What did he believe? That God could and would solve his problem if he wanted him enough. I saw recovery. I felt hope. I believed that God could and would if he were sought. I'm going to do that one more time. I saw recovery. I felt hope. I believed that God could and would if he were sought. Wow. Wow. So it's over. The bleak millennium, the bleak thousands of years of alcoholic suffering is now over. Now we have to carry the message. And until we have certain things happening, we're not qualified to carry the message. And we're going to see how that occurs in God's most infinite wisdom. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. A new world came into view. The world as was known before this moment in November of 1934 did not exist any longer. There was now a place to go. There was something that could be done for alcoholism, and it was free. No more snake oil salesmen. No more con men. No more of any of this just degradation. Now there's a way out. The original working title of this book was The Way Out. And it was Fitz Mayo that went to the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., and found there were 12 books named The Way Out. And they didn't want this one to be the 13th book called The Way Out. So they decided on their second choice, which was Alcoholics Anonymous. But the original title of this book was supposed to be The Way Out. Let's continue. Bottom of 12. The real significance of my experience in the cathedral, this is the third time that he's mentioned it. Must be pretty important. And yet people on vision or anywhere in meetings will go through that paragraph. Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking cold small beer, and they will laugh it off. It is extremely important. It's extremely important. He's going to mention it three times. You think if he mentions it three times, it might be important? I think so. Don't be one of those people that just laughs that paragraph off. The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, dash, and he came. When I walk toward God, he runs toward me. He loves me enough to be there with me and be there for me. He knows how much I need him and how weak I am. He knows that I have no mental defense against the first bite. He knows I have no defense against my insecurities, my fears, my anger, my dishonesty. He knows how weak and defective I am. He knows me. I'm human. I've been traumatized. That trauma rears its ugly head in my life every day. I need God more today than I needed him yesterday. There's an old rock and roll song by Spiral Staircase when I was a kid. It was in the 60s. I was born in the 50s, but I was raised in the 60s. And the name of the song is I Love You More Today Than Yesterday, But Not As Much As Tomorrow. And that's my relationship with God in a sentence. I love and God need more today than I did yesterday, but not as much as I'm going to need him tomorrow. Because it's a progressive illness, and I'm getting older. I'm getting closer to the finish line. I hope when I go and I cross over, he'll say, "Rocky start, but you did a good job. You finished strong. You did a good job, Harlan. Now here's your candy. It has no calories up here, and there's the buffet off to the left. And there's all my favorite things with no calories, and I can chow like there's no tomorrow." No, I'm kidding. But okay. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, And he came. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors. That means that not everything is going to go your way. I don't win the lottery every week. I've never won it in my life. I still have to work. I wish I was retired. I wish somebody would hand me a check and say, don't ever work again as long as you live. But it's probably not going to happen. But worldly clamors, if you lack worldly clamors, go to Chicago, get on the Eden's Expressway, drive around for about a half hour. You'll have some worldly clamors. Get on the Kennedy Expressway in Chicago, Illinois. You'll have some worldly clamors. Drive out to O'Hare Field in Chicago. You'll have some worldly clamors. That'll fix your wagon. Don't you worry, they'll take care of you, and you'll need God. All right, mostly those within myself, and so it had been ever since. How blind I had been. How blind I had been when the solution in many areas was right there in front of me, and I ignored it because of my ego, my fear, my reluctance to do the work. Just like everyone else, I have to do what everyone else does. The ego says, no, I don't. I'm special. I'm better than you, or I'm worse than you. And that is not true. And so we have a situation where this reading, I hope, has been meaningful to you. I hope that your relationship with God and yourself have been enlightened upon. It is my sincere hope. It is a difficult subject to often talk about, because when you talk about God, you often rub people the wrong way. People get upset. They don't like what I have to say. I'm doing the best I can to present the information in a way that is palatable, and it reflects more my experience than any other opinion that I might have. I hope I never gave you today any opinion of God, what God should be, what God shouldn't be. I hope I didn't do that for any of you. What I believe or who I am should have nothing to do with you. You find your own path. If God wanted you to be a carbon copy of me, then one of us is unnecessary. But these are the things that I found in my life. And that is, my doubt was more anger than doubt. I knew there was a God. I was just angry because he didn't make me thin, and he didn't give me Rob and Laura Petrie for parents. He gave me Max and Virginia Grabowski and a whole multitude of other things that did or did not happen. Okay, what I'd like to do is just remind you once again that if you are on our Scottsdale evening meetings, all of those meetings, if you are outside the state of Arizona, as of tomorrow, will begin 1 hour later. If you are not in Arizona and you are coming to an evening meeting, it goes an hour later. If you're in Arizona, the Saturday morning meeting that you're at right now, next week, will begin 1 hour earlier. Otherwise, if you're not in Arizona, no change, no change whatsoever. Okay, we're going to open it up for Q&A. I'm going to turn it back.